Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal. Of ghosts, UFOs, demons, Bigfoot, and generally anything unexplained. We live in a diverse world where we don't fully understand everything that happens around us. These are the topics that we are discussing on Paranormal Horizons. Stay tuned with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang, as we look a little deeper into the world of the paranormal. Paranormal Horizons begins now.
Hello. Hi, this is Sherry. I don't know what happened to Jason. I think that he fell off the face of the earth. anyway, when Jason gets on, I just want to let everybody know. Okay, I'm just continuing.
I was kind of here.
So, are you there?
Yeah, I actually, you know, I have this headset, and it's got a really sensitive button, and it mutes if I bump it the wrong way. So here I was talking.
That's
and, well,
okay.
You know,
I was already continuing, but
through.
I couldn't get our guest on. So anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Paranormal Horizons. So how was your week, Jason?
It was okay. Nothing terribly exciting. And I actually was working the closing shift, and man, I didn't get home till 2 in the morning, and it's rough as usual. But I survived, and how was your week?
Very nice. Very, very nice. Just really, just a lot of work, a lot of business, a lot of work, and just very busy. So, yes, it's been a very good week, and hope to have a better week, and I'm looking forward to this next guest. So, his name is Mike Fries. He is an author. He's been on the Phil Donahue show. He's been on Lisa's show. He's just a wealth of information. He's written 50 books, and we'll talk about it later at the end of the show, where if you're interested in buying any of the books or getting a hold of him, we're just going to go from there. So, Jason, you ready to bring him back on?
Yeah, we'll bring him on right now.
Okay.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. How you doing,
Hi,
Jason? Hi, Jerry.
Good.
So how's everything
how's
going
the
there?
Out there back east or up in the mountains? How is that?
Yeah, up in the Rocky Mountains. Well, you know, it has been cold, but it's not bad now. I mean, it's like in the 40s, but we had a long cold spell of below zero to 20 for a long time, but not that bad. It's starting to break a little bit. So I'm still, I hope I don't sound too raspy. I've been fighting this flu bug, and I'm finally starting to get over it. But so if you hear me kind
no,
of,
you, sound, you're
you know,
fine.
Clearing my throat. So anyway, that's, but otherwise, everything's good.
Good, good.
Yeah, that's
well,
nice.
Anyway,
yeah.
Just quickly, very quickly until we get into the different subject, the subject lines, but quickly, just introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, okay, I, you know, go by Mike Freeze, but with my books, I have Michael Freeze, which is fine, too. But I'm a secular Franciscan author. That's a lay order of the Franciscans, so I'm not a priest, but... yeah, that's what the SFO stands for, after my Michael Freeze name, in case people were wondering, Secular Franciscan Order. Well, basically, many, many years ago, I don't really want to say how many, but anyway, many years ago, I just kind of got interested in supernatural phenomena, mystical things, miracles, voices, visions, wonders, all of these kinds of things, preternatural. And so I took a long time studying that, researching that, and then eventually I decided to start writing about it because in my younger days I was a songwriter, and then when I went to college, one of my degrees was English and religious studies and so on. So one thing led to another, and I started writing books, and I got a deal with Our Sunday Visitor out of Indiana, which is the largest, I happen to be Catholic, it's the largest Catholic publishing house in the world. And I ended up having, quite a few books written with them. And then I also wrote some books with Baker Bookhouse out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I had a contract with them. And then, so I wrote quite a few books. This has been back, 20 years ago. And over 7, 8, 10 years' time. And then I just sort of gave it up for a while. I just kind of got burnt out. But then I decided to rewrite again the last couple of years. And Amazon, you know, the internet now, back then it wasn't really a big thing. You know, there's that access for an author to actually publish his own works, have a place to market them. You know, you can do all this now, upload them. And so anyway, I took a lot of my older books, reformatted them, re-uploaded them, made them available today as e-books, as paperback books, and audiobooks. Really cool. They didn't have that then. So to make a long story short, I wrote a lot more books over the last couple of years. Since then, I broke some of my larger works from years ago down into smaller, manageable books. And so, yeah, I do have over 50 books out there. My main area of expertise would have to be supernatural, like I said, supernatural phenomena, miracles, and especially demonology, because I did write a 12-book series on that. And my former bishop here in Helena, Montana, Eldon F. Curtis, who was later appointed Archbishop of Omaha, Nebraska, he did review the work. It was a monster book. It was like 900,000 pages. I broke those down. But he reviewed it. I got the Neil Olmstead and the Imprimatur, which means it's been reviewed. Nothing runs contrary to the faith and the morals of the church. And so it was scrutinized pretty well, but I have that stamp of approval, so I feel confident that those 12 books on the eerie topic of demons and demonology, I feel that I've done a fairly good job on being very careful with that, and I didn't treat it lightly. I didn't treat it like some phenomena that a lot of people do for the sake of publicity, in movies and so forth. I really took it as a serious study. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell.
So you mentioned one of the things that we haven't actually, and I do want to talk about demonology because I find it to
sure.
be one of the more interesting subjects, but I'm thinking back at, we've done about 150 episodes, and I don't know off the top of my head that we ever talked about miracles. And as everybody
yeah.
knows, I'm kind of a skeptical. So I'd be interested to hear some stories or anything regarding, you know, miracles, because I think that's fascinating.
Well, yeah, I came out with a book last year called Miracles of the Saints. And you know, well, not from the saints, but of course on behalf of God, but miracles through the lives of the saints. And I have a book out on that, and I discuss that in great detail. And when we talk about that, there's so many things you talk about, like, well, there's the reading of the hearts and the minds, cardiognosis. There's the gift of inedia, which is a gift of not, this is a Catholic perspective now, of not surviving on nothing but the host, the Eucharist, for years and years, very little water. There's a bilocation, being in more than two places at one time, spiritually. And there's the gift of the stigmata. And I had a bestseller with Our Sunday Visitor on. They bore the wounds of Christ, the mystery of the sacred stigmata. And but that's the wounds of Christ that some victim souls bear in their bodies. And they've been medically examined and reaffirmed. Then there's voices, visions, and apparitions. These seers, these chosen
souls.
So, Mike,
I don't need to intervene, but I got a question for you. So when when I've seen, I have not seen that physically happen, but I've heard that that's happened to people. Do you feel that it's been like a predestined that these certain people, whether it's God, whether it's you know, archangels or whatever, are these people are selected to be having these kind of wounds?
Well, you're focusing in on the stigmata, you mean?
Yes.
That's I think they are. I think that usually it only occurs to those very few people that give their entire life up to the contemplative life of prayer, offering their sufferings up for others, having that close spiritual union with God. And they really aren't in the world, but they're of the world. And God, if one believes this, God blesses those souls to help intervene through their prayers, through their suffering, for the salvation of everyone. And that's if you believe that even though Jesus died for all of us, of course, on the cross, if you believe in the concept of reparation and expiation, that there are people that can offer themselves up because sin continues to go on, even though God, through Jesus, died for our sins, we still sin. And so it's kind of like they're offering themselves up to help repair or expiate for the ongoing sins that people commit. And so one can believe that or not. I happen to, because I've studied so much on it, that I think it's a rare case, the stigmata. But I think there's been like about 350 authenticated cases in the church throughout history out of the billions of Catholics that have lived. But I think it's real. I think they've been documented well enough in terms of medically, psychologically, witnesses, so forth, that I'm convinced it's authentic.
What do you think,
well,
Sherry? Do you believe in that's possible, that people have these?
I believe that's possible, and I've read people that have had that, and I didn't know what the concept. I would think that myself, I would think that these people are marked for obviously a reason, but it sounds like it makes sense as some kind of sacrificial thing where they're sacrificing their soul for service or something. That makes sense. So, yeah, it's kind of way out there.
Have you two heard of Padre Pio?
Yes, I have.
I
have you, Jason?
Well, he is.
No.
For those that aren't Catholic, let's say, Padre Pio is one of the more famous contemporary or modern-day stigmatics. He bore the wounds of Christ in his body for 50 years, longer than anybody in history. And
wow.
I had the privilege of going to San Giovanni Rotondo, Italy, twice to interview and get to know two of his close daily companions for the last 3 years of his life. And we talked, and they had all kinds of great stories. I have a book written on that too, but they explained all that to me. And he had the gift. He was born like in 1887, died in 1968. And from 1918 to 1968, 50 years, he bore the stigmata. Well, he had the wounds, and his companions saw him every day. They were clearly visible. He would bleed about a pint of blood a day, but he would never get sick, other than it hurt. On his feet, on his hands, he had a side wound, and didn't have the crown of thorns, but he had those wounds. And he had to wear gloves because it would bleed and ooze all day long. Well, anyway, to make another long story short, another miracle, if one believes this is true, is that when he died, as soon as he died, the wounds, over a few days' time, completely disappeared. No sign of them, no scarring, no pussing, no festering, no odor. They completely disappeared, even though they were visible for 50 years. So I asked them, well, why is that? And they believe that it was the second miracle from God. He served his purpose. If anybody didn't believe he had them for 50 years, they were taken away. There were photos of his wounds for years, and then there were photos of his body after he had died a number of days later before he was buried, and no sign of the wounds. And doctors couldn't explain it. Like I said, no scarring, no festering, no pussing, nothing. So it was like a second miracle to confirm that he really was gifted by God, for those that might not have believed that it was real all of his life. It's a fascinating topic, it really is. But it's that sacrificial offering. Some people that bear the stigmata or have borne the stigmata don't offer themselves up for it. God gives it to them. Others do offer themselves up, and sometimes God doesn't give it to them. And there's an invisible stigmata and a visible stigmata. Many mystics throughout the church history bore these same wounds and felt the same pains that Christ had on the cross, but it never manifested externally, just as painful. A lot of it was because out of acts of humility, they prayed that it would not be shown, or God was teaching them humility. And for some reason, God allowed others to manifest those wounds for others to see and believe. So anyway, you know that old saying, there are other Christs among us. Only one Jesus, but we have Christ among us as examples of his life when he was human and living here. So I guess that whole theory, theologically, makes sense to me, but it is rare.
I guess it would be kind of a natural thing where if the stigmata was in fact real, and you know that goes all back to the biblical stuff and Jesus, that then demons could be real too. We've talked to a lot of demonologists in the past. It's a subject that I don't know how I feel about it. One thing is that I don't like to give too much thought to it, because I think if when you give things thought, it gives it power. And
there are diabolical stigmata too. I mean, there are. Can I say one other quick thing before I don't mean to interrupt
sure,
you.
Sure.
But if you refer back to the Gospels, not the Gospels, but St. Paul, excuse me, in his writings, you know, there's some kind of slight hint in the Gospels that the stigmata could be real as far back as that time. Because Paul once said, if you remember, I bear the wounds of Christ in my body. Do you remember that? I don't know if it was Galatians. I think it was a passage in Galatians. But he said he suffered. He bore the wounds of Christ in his body. Now, was that stigmata, or was it just sort of an internal suffering because he was passionately attached to Jesus? I don't know. But there's hints of that even in the scriptures. Whether or not it's true, it's just something to ponder. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I find myself I'm skeptical about everything, and one of the reasons is because there's so much fakery out there. Kind of like that, you know, you have the people say that they do psychic surgery and it's sleight of hand and technology faking. It's hard to know what to believe. I'm kind of one of those people that has to experience something, then I'll be like, hey, I believe. But like I said, you know, the whole demonology thing, I'm not a religious person, so I don't know anything about it. The demonology thing is kind of a scary subject. Like I said, we've talked to people in the past that have been attacked by demons, and but I do find myself skeptical. Mm-hmm. In your research into that topic, have you found anything
right.
that substantiates that that's an actual reality?
Well, I guess, yeah, it's kind of hard to sum that up on a show because it took me 12 books to really go through all that over a number of years of research. But I did interview a lot of priests that in the Catholic Church that were commissioned to be a solemn exorcist for the diocese they were in on those occasions where there appeared to be some demonic activity, diabolical intrusion, oppression, and possibly possession. And that includes locations, homes, buildings, as well as people. Because houses, homes, can also be influenced by the evil spirits. Now, yeah, now, as far as my proving that, I mean, it's hard to prove, but I mean, we're talking about the unseen world here. But it's the things that happen that manifest that we can hear, see, touch, taste, smell, and sense in our hearts and souls that there is something going on there that's clearly preternatural and not of human design. So even though they're invisible, there are manifestations that witnesses have come forth, and there's too many of them over the centuries to deny it, that something's going on there that has to be real. Jesus himself said over and over again in the New Testament, in the Gospels, you know, he came here to undo what the power of the devil has done. And he's always confronting the demon. He's always exorcising. He's always healing people because of diabolical afflictions. They aren't all diabolical, but some are. But it's over and over and over again throughout the Gospels. I mean, it's very obvious. And then throughout history, it continued to be obvious he attacks anyone. But as the gospel or as the New Testament says, he often appears as an angel of light to deceive many. His great success is to fool people into thinking he doesn't exist. He doesn't operate in the world. He's not there. It's all an illusion. It's all a fantasy. So I guess you either believe or you don't. But my theory on it is, if you believe in the good, and Jesus really did come and confront evil in the desert, everywhere, he confronted evil constantly. If you believe in the good and you believe what Jesus said, you equally have to believe in the reality of the darkness, the evil one, and the demons that follow him. Because otherwise there would be no justification for Christ dying on the cross for us if he didn't have to die for something to save us. Now, of course, a lot of people say, well, yeah, but we have natural sin. Human weakness, that doesn't necessarily mean it's diabolical. I agree. Temptations, things like that, pride, maybe anger. Sometimes we have that in our human weakness, but there is also a diabolical force that's very real that can be behind some of these things. That's just my view. See, that's just my opinion.
I would say that, yeah, if there is good, then there has to be evil. I mean, I've said it many times before, there's a duality with everything, you know, light, dark, positive, negative. And Sherry, I don't know.
When I wrote my books on, you know, when I wrote my books on the demonology, the 12 books I wrote, I felt that presence. I felt it. I felt it. Something resisting me to write them. It was a force. I felt it. I couldn't pinpoint it, but it was like a pressure on me. Things popped in my head, thoughts, temptations. Things would come up that would distract me, stop me from writing for a while. I just kept going forward, but I felt it, and it wasn't there when I wrote my books that weren't on demonology, but I felt it when I got into that topic. And I can't explain it. I didn't have anything unseen smack me in the head or anything like that, or crosses flying, crucifixes flying off the wall or anything like that. But I felt it. I felt there was something in the presence of the area where I was writing a heavy weight that was not normal. I was thinking normal, I was writing normal, but I felt the presence. But I didn't feel that before on my other books. So I sensed it, and it's hard to describe. It's a feeling that you know when you're facing something evil that's different than just trials and stresses we have in normal life. It's completely different. It's overwhelming. It's hard to explain. So, you know, I don't know. It is an eerie topic, though. It really is.
Well, we do tend to have technical difficulties anytime we had Archbishop Ron Fial on the show, and
uh-huh.
Maybe there is something to it. I choose not to mess with it. You know, there ain't no Ouija board in my place. I don't want to invite anything.
There shouldn't be. That's a no-no. Well, I write about all that stuff too. But one of my books was on the occult and the history of witchcraft and Satanism and all that stuff. But yeah, that's a no-no. Anytime you mess around with tarot cards, Ouija boards, what else? Tea leaves? It doesn't really matter. It doesn't even have to be a Ouija board. You can just put two spoons on a table. It doesn't matter. You're inviting something beyond yourself to correspond with you that's spiritual, whether you want to call it supernatural or preternatural, something out there. And you might be trying to contact a dead relative, let's say, or a dead friend. Well, a lot of people start out that way. But are you really contacting a dead relative or a friend? Maybe. But what happens if it's a diabolical force that makes you think you're doing that, and then they start taking a hold of you as that invitation was addressed? See, that all that stuff is dangerous. It really is. I messed with Ouija boards when I was young, teenager. You know, for a while, I never had anything happen then. But some people do, apparently. I have a priest friend, a very good dear friend of mine, that was with among other people that were doing a Ouija board thing at a party one time. And he was a young priest, and he was just sitting there, and they were having a couple of beers or whatever, and they were messing around with the Ouija board. And he personally saw one person sitting at the table just get pushed off the table, but nobody pushed him. And he kind of went across the floor, and his chair literally lifted up and just flew, and the guy had to move aside, and it flew, and it just smashed up against the wall. And this priest friend of mine saw this while they were messing with the Ouija board, but there was nobody doing it. Nobody, I mean, there was no magician in there. Everybody else was sitting at the table. Everybody saw it, but they didn't see it. I mean, they saw it, but they saw nobody doing it. So, I don't know. Unless he's lying, that's kind of spooky, isn't it?
Yeah, I
know
it's
eerie.
You see something move on its own.
Oh, yeah. That is something. Wow.
It is.
And I bet after
I know,
that experience, Mikey was never the same again, was he?
Pardon me?
I said, Mike, after that experience, that person was never the same again.
No, that's what I understand, and I understand that's true with anybody that really encounters pure evil in their lives, even if it's not possession, even if it's just the beginning stage of being obsessed or overcome, infiltrated, they call it, all kinds of terms for this, bondage, whatever. But they're never the same, because once your soul, once your spirit, once your personality feels, and even if they don't see it, if they feel or taste or smell or see evil in its purest form, it changes them forever. Even exorcists, famous exorcists that have existed over the years, they say the same thing. Something dies in them whenever they confront the evil one. And even if it's a successful exorcism, if it's a successful exorcism, great, but still something dies in them. You know, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, scary. It's horrifying. Very dangerous vocation to be involved with, I guess.
So
thank God it
is
rare. I'm sorry.
If somebody feels like they are surrounded by an evil presence, like oppression or whatever, Does it have to be like a Catholic remedy where you have to have a priest bless it? I know a lot of people go and burn sage and do a lot of Native American and New Age stuff to get rid of that.
Right,
in your opinion, what's the best way to deal with that sort of thing to eliminate?
Well, you know, again, with my degree in religious studies, meaning I had to study, you know, different traditions, Protestant, Catholic, Native American, Jewish, Buddhist, which is nice. It's nice to have an open mind. I guess, as a Catholic, that seems to be one of those things that they've had in their tradition and their beliefs and their theology for 2,000 years. A lot of churches haven't come around until the last few hundred years. So they have a deep tradition of believing in that, and it's very rigid on what they believe. I mean, yes, a priest has to, an ordained priest who is very holy, very pious, very prayerful, fasting before confronting the evil one, like, say, in an exorcism case. And they have to, usually they have to be older, wise, experienced. They may have witnessed cases from older priests in the past, assisted them, and they were able to take that on later. And every diocese in the church around the world has some appointed official solemn exorcist. But is that the only way? Well, if we're Catholics, I guess having an ordained priest, because that's considered a sacrament, a special mark from God, gift from God, to give them a kind of a power isn't the word, but a gift maybe, a blessing, an extra protection from God to deal with the demonic. And their studies, and, you know, I mean, they know what they're doing, their experience. The average layperson probably is foolish to attempt to run around their house and be gone, Satan, with the crucifix. Be gone, Satan, like you see in the movies. I cast thee out, Satan. Well, you know, it's in the movies, but you don't want to mess with the evil one, because he is all-knowing, all-powerful. He has been around for almost time beginning. He knows everything. And we live these two puny little lives for, what, a few years. He's been around for a long time. You don't want to mess with him. But anyway, getting back to your point, do Protestants have a valid way of doing that when they have delivery ministries where you see preachers on TV all the time who are gathering in a congregation? They've got tons of people in the congregation, and they're dropping over and, be gone, Satan, be gone. Well, I don't know if that's valid or not. Maybe it is. Maybe their ministry as pastors, maybe that's valid too in God's eyes, and maybe they really are successfully casting out demonic spirits. It seems a little showy to me, a little flashy, to be doing that on TV and make millions of dollars off of books right afterwards. It seems a little bit phony to me. Catholics usually are pretty solemn, quiet about it. They don't advertise it much. They think it's rare. They make sure the person's evaluated for a long time by psychiatrists, psychologists, the theologians, make sure there's nothing like epilepsy behind these things, or a mental disorder of some kind, before they rule everything out natural, before they think it could be preternatural, and there are signs they look for. Again, Jews have their system with their rabbis, and Buddhists and Muslims, they all have traditions of recognizing evil spirits as a part of their belief system. It's almost universal. But yeah, Catholics do have certain things they look for that spell out this could be diabolical and not just human caused or human error or human mental condition or an illness. There are certain signs that rule out. And I don't know if you ever want to talk about that, but there are signs they look for that would make them want to proceed with an exorcism. Do you want to hear that sometime? I'll be glad to share.
Sure.
It.
Let me. I did have a question that popped into my head. It's kind of unrelated, but I want to mention it before I lose it from my brain. It's one of the things. I guess it's kind of related. Is I have been seeing. Well, firstly, there's a real big influx of ghost shows and paranormal groups, horror movies, and all that. So I assume that the epidemic of people making themselves more susceptible to evil is kind of getting a lot more popular, and it's probably happening more. But the one thing that popped into my head was there are these websites that you can go on, and I wanted to touch this because of your background in religion, where you can basically fill out a form, and then you're an ordained minister. And I know people that have done this, and they go out and do ministry things and say they're a minister. What is your take on that? I'm really interested.
All right. To be honest with you, some might disagree with me, but I think it's a joke. I'm going to fill out a form, and you're an ordained minister, or take a couple courses online. You know, there's those things, too. Maybe it takes 3 or 4 months. We'll get you through for a few courses. Buy our books, money, 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 you know, and become ordained ministers, money, money, money. We want part of the cut of what people are, you know, contributing, tithing. Sometimes it's so phony. But, no, I think it's all phony. I think it's a scam. I don't think those are legitimately true ordained ministers that were given a gift by God just because they filled a form out. I mean, I think you have to have a lifetime of an inclination or an attraction to the holy, to God, in prayer, in your life, living a pious life, living a life of humility. All these things kind of go together over time. I think for God to give a special blessing or vocation to somebody to become an ordained priest or minister or rabbi, whatever, I think that's phony. I just don't think it happens. I really don't.
I agree.
I think it's phony.
My sentiment is exactly
that.
Too. Especially in
they
the,
fill out
you know,
a form.
Yeah.
And they're marrying
a lot of
people and doing stuff. You know.
I see these people that are in the spiritual arena and just a general, and you go to these people and I'm a spiritual minister or I'm a registered, you know, whatever. And you know that people are just, you know, doing that, like you said, to capitalize upon that so that they can, you know, get their foot in the door. Yeah.
Yeah, and it really doesn't make sense because when you're messing around with something so serious, so
it's
devastating,
it's
so life-threatening.
Service.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, well, no, you can't take it that lightly. You just don't fill out a form or take a couple of months of courses. No way. I mean, to begin with, you're up against powers that are so much higher than anything we've ever experienced as humans. Nobody's more powerful than the evil one, of course, known as Satan, the devil, Lucifer, whatever, the malevolent spirit, the mystery of iniquity, goes on and on and on, the liar. But nobody's that powerful on this planet, and there never has been. The only ones that are, of course, would be God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And if you believe in this, maybe the angels in heaven, I do. You know, the guardian angels like Michael, St. Michael, who is doing that eternal battle with the evil one because of God's preordination for that. And maybe the saints or the martyrs in heaven, that if they are with God in heaven, they probably have an impact. But other than that, nobody down here can mess with this on a quick diploma or a quick course. Even the ones that have been holy and righteous and are doctors of theology, as well as maybe priests or bishops, even they cannot take the evil one on without God's help. So the other people are like way down as no chance. They're just deceiving people. People, you know, all of us are gullible. If we see, you know what do you call that, mass hypnosis? When you get a big gathering of people together and you get a minister up there that praise the Lord and raises his hands and shouts at the right moment, praise you, Jesus, praise you, Jesus. Well, then everybody starts getting into the act. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like a hypnotic trance. And these people go away. You can do serious psychological and spiritual damage to people, getting them in that frenzy when they think they're being healed, or maybe they have a problem that's not evil, and they think it is, and it can mess them up. It's not something to take lightly.
So those healers at these big mega churches, and they wave their arm, and suddenly somebody can walk after not walking for 30 years.
Yeah, you know, and I really do believe God does heal, and I really do believe there really is a gift. Like St. Paul said, there's many different gifts from the Spirit for different people for different reasons. I really do believe there is a gift that some people, probably rare, but some people have, where their hands, their prayers, their touch, God gave them that gift to heal. And even Jesus commissioned his disciples to go out and cast out demons, to heal in my name. Of course, it's through Jesus. But basically, you know, not everybody has each of those gifts. And I think it is rare. Some people are called to preach, some to do ministry work, some to do to be in convents or monasteries for prayer, and some are called to administrative work, and some are called for spiritual kind of supernatural, extraordinary gifts like healing. I think it's real, but I think it's rare again, and I don't think that I think that a lot of these people you see doing this on TV, throw away your crutch, you know. You know that old joke, there was a joke about that. You know, poor guy, he's on a crutch and it's probably set up, it's probably rigged. They're probably paying the guy, all right, on TV to do it, honestly. Mm-hmm. He'll come up in a cane or a wheelchair and stand up and walk. And he throws it away and praise the Lord. You know, there's that old joke, where'd he go? What happened to him? Well, Mr. So-and-so just fell on his butt. You know, there's that sick joke about that. But, you know, a lot of there have been a lot of people who have paid off people to act like they were crippled, and they throw it away. And, hey,
oh,
you know.
Oh, really?
That,
were these actually, like, it's been pre-orchestrated where it's an act?
Oh, of course, because the,
oh, my God,
whoever the
that's
leader,
horrible.
whatever minister in the church, you know, they're usually minor. They're usually not major churches like Methodists or Catholics or Lutherans. They're usually some oddball church, you know, you hear about. But somehow they get on TV, get a show. They're wearing this fancy jewelry, fancy three-piece suits. You know, they're reading out of the Bible. And they actually, there's been stories about this. People have investigated people who left the church, talked to them, interviewed them, and said, yeah, I was paid off to do that. And this guy keeps
wow.
his TV show going.
See, that's
he makes
wrong.
Megabucks.
Oh,
he sells
goodness.
More money on selling his books. But see, that kind of stuff is disgusting. But I think there really is a true gift of healing. I went to a healing, a Catholic healing gathering from a priest from Massachusetts, a priest that was known for his gift of healing. And he did come, and he wasn't phony. He was very sincere, very pious, quiet, not fire and brimstone preaching, shouting, very quiet. And I saw a lot of people that apparently were healed. I didn't see any crutches thrown or anything like that. But some people said their hearing came back. But most of the healings are of a spiritual or personal nature. Somebody is converted when they didn't believe before, or somebody's depression leaves, or somebody suddenly is just something lifts off their soul when they had problems before and they're normal again. And it's more usually you'll see the healings on that level, not physical healings, but that does happen. It can happen, yeah. Why not? Jesus said it happened. Jesus did it. Of course, he was Jesus, but he also commissioned his disciples to do that in his name. So I think it's real, but just beware. Beware of all the phonies out there. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of believe that. I believe people have abilities as well. So, I sorry for the sidetrack. I know you wanted to discuss the signs of possession, which I'm also very interested in hearing.
Oh, that's okay. You want me to try to briefly mention a few?
Yeah, I'd be curious. I'm going to be afraid if I have some, though.
Yeah, you're going to go and have nightmares tonight. Just don't watch The Exorcist when you go to bed, all right?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
But that was scary. That was a scary. And that was based on a true story, too. But it wasn't really a girl. It was a young boy. But it was a true story, apparently. I mean, that's how they documented it. But anyway, okay, some of the signs. One day maybe I can talk more if I come on the show again about what is the difference between ghosts, poltergeists, and diabolical activity in hauntings,
yes.
Things okay. like that. And we can get into that, but briefly let me say, if I want to exclude the possibility of human spirits haunting a house, let's say, and people see manifestations or visions, ghostly visions or whatever, or poltergeists, which are basically noisy ghosts, that may be human spirits, if one believes that, or they could be diabolical spirits posing as human spirits. But some of the signs, even for exorcism, one, that's not human. You can't usually do this as a human. One, the foul stench, the odors are so awful when there was no odors in the house before when an evil presence manifests. Foul odors, usually you don't get that with human spirits or ghosts. Maybe, but usually not. That usually can't be duplicated on the spot suddenly in a room unless you're a magician or something. Number two, having a violent reaction to anything in a home that's religious or holy, crucifixes can fly off the wall. Rosary beads can shatter. Pictures of saints or whatever you have in your home, anything that's religious, a violent reaction towards God, towards Jesus. Now, usually, ghosts don't do that. I mean, they might play around with you. They may be angry. They may be hurt. They may be lost. They may be confused. They may be sorry. They may be angry and mad. Maybe they do do things that can be harmful, but usually they don't attack religious objects. Another one, a big one, is the evil one will mock the Trinity. Threes. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the Trinity. The evil one will often, you'll hear these sounds. Let me see if I can do this on a wall. Do you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear that? Three knocks on a wall. And it can subside and come back later, carry on. That's a mockery of the Holy Trinity being a three. Or there could be three footsteps. Or there could be three scratches on the wall. There could be three scratches on your back. When you see those, for some reason, that seems to be the case, and you don't see ghosts doing that usually, but a direct, very obvious attack on the Trinity, attack on religious objects, foul odors, and rumbly, inhuman voices heard out of nowhere from the walls, from the floors, from your bed, in your head, off the side of your vision, your tunnel vision kind of thing. A gravelly, deep, laughing, penetrating, spooky voice that does not sound human, and one never associates with seeing a human ghost in a home. So, and the terror one feels is so obvious. Those are some of the, and then of course, that's the haunting thing, but then if you're getting an exorcism, other signs, speaking in foreign languages, like ancient Hebrew, or ancient Aramaic, ancient Greek, coming from a victim that's never studied these languages, and it's all coming out, and you get language experts witnessing this stuff at an exorcism, and they know the ancient languages, like linguistics experts, and yes, that is ancient Aramaic. This person would have never known that. Or shouting things out, I know what you did to so-and-so. 2 years ago in October, on a Thursday at this place, remember the sin you committed? And they've never told a person in their life, but it's true. They can read your heart, read your mind. They can know all your past sins, and they can blurt them out to infuriate and put down and overcome the people that are there. And they can, these are things that aren't normally human possible. Extraordinary strength is another one. They tie these victims down for the protection of everybody. They remove objects that can fly around the room. But these demonic spirits, if they possess a body, they can have 10 times the normal human strength. That's why a lot of times you have 5, 6, 7, 8 people there present at an exorcism. Sometimes they have to physically subdue them so they don't harm anybody, because it's just not a normal human extraordinary strength. So I think those are, and then the eyes. The eyes are a giveaway. There's something in the eyes, dark, black, piercing, haunting. They pierce into your soul. and you can't duplicate that normally. Even if you have mental problems, it's a different kind of a stare. And that speaking out of the person, that dark, deep voice, or that ridiculing, laughing voice that humans or that particular person could never exercise out of their vocal cords. I mean, normally they would never. So there's all kinds of things that would indicate signs of there's a demonic presence here, and it's not just this person just isn't just schizic or bipolar, or they're not just suffering from a Tourette syndrome or whatever. I mean, there's something beyond what we normally know medically is possible in humans. And this F language and blah, blah, blah. Well, a lot of people say, okay, true. Science and medicine has proven that that can be a sign of a, I think, what is it, Tourette syndrome? That or people can do things when they go into an epileptic seizure. But I'm talking about things beyond that. Are there any questions you have on that so far? Or is that a good summary?
That's a good summary. I'm a little freaked out. I tend to wake up at 3 a.m. often, but, you know, maybe.
Well, that's a bad hour, right?
Yeah.
Why is that a bad hour?
Well, again, okay, now there's theories on that. If you talk to people that are involved with witchcraft and sorcery, it's the witch's hour. You know, and I don't know if that has anything to do with any, but one of the theories is, from a religious point of view, we're mocking the Trinity again. 3 a.m. is a symbol. 3 is a symbol of the Trinity. Perfection. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. 1, 2, 3. 3 a.m. Again, there you go. 3 knocks on the wall. There you go. 3 scratches. There you go. It's that 3 thing again. And so it's a mockery. So I guess that's the only conclusion I could ever come up with from a religious, theological point of view, is that's why 3 a.m. can be a particularly active time period for a demonic spirit. I might not be right about that at all. It's just a theory.
I better get some holy water or something.
Yes, and the holy water, that's another one. That's another sign. An average person doesn't react violently to holy water. Even if they're bipolar or have Down syndrome or, you know, go off in tangents, they just normally don't react to holy water just because it's holy water. And there have been experiments during exorcisms where people have tried to sprinkle water on somebody that is assumed to be possessed. And it's like a placebo thing. They've done experiments where it wasn't blessed. It was just water out of the tap. And they didn't react. But if a priest had blessed the water, and then it was sprinkled on the victim or even put in their presence, what is that? What is that? And it's kind of like The Exorcist. They sprinkle it on. Oh, it burns, it burns. And there's all these voices, if there are multiple demons in the person, just coming out and screeching, and the person just swells and gets red, and it burns. But if it's water, and you just said it was holy water, they don't react because they know. They know if it's been blessed or not. They just know things that we don't know. It's kind of eerie, isn't it?
I
don't want to be near or around that kind of thing. That's for sure.
It's one of those things where I don't know why, what, excuse the pun, but I don't know what possessed me to get involved with that study. But I just think reading the lives of the saints, reading the Gospels, what Jesus confronted all the time, I thought, you know, this is crazy. So many people believe, and they go to church and they read the Bible and they're praising Jesus. Great. But, you know, Jesus warned us, hey, you know, there's good and there's evil. It really exists. There's an eternal spiritual warfare going on until the end of time. And, of course, we read that St. Michael will defeat the demon and he will be cast into hell forever. And then, you know, Jesus will create peace and harmony for everybody and we'll be happy and all that. But if that's all true, I wanted to know more about what is this mysterious, dark iniquity through the ages that has a hold on us that's very real. We should know about that besides just praise the Lord or I'm speaking in tongues and hallelujah. But yeah, that's great. I mean, we should focus on that and not dwell on evil, but you should know about it too. Because, you know, forearmed is forewarned is forewarned or vice versa. But you should know about it just to keep your eyes out, keep your ears open in case you run across things that might challenge your faith, your spiritual journey, your tranquility, your holiness. Because the devil will attack people more severely that are closer to God than those who are just not even believers. They're just out running around doing their normal life thing. The devil will attack those that are closer to God because he doesn't want them. He wants to take their soul. He can't stand human beings, the devil, because the devil was proud, as Lucifer was cast out of heaven because he disobeyed God. Well, he's got this pride thing. He hates God, but he hates God's creatures, humans. And if humans love God, he hates them because he's been cast out. So, you know, but ones that are holy and trying to reach towards God, they're the ones that are most often attacked the worst. Because the devil doesn't have to worry about ones that are just living a sinful life and a carefree life, partying, whatever, not religious. He's already got them. You know, they're already sinning. They're not thinking about God anyway. He's probably already got them and doesn't have to worry about it. But it's the ones that are holy. He wants to draw them away. So that's another theological kind of a thing you can talk about. But, yeah, I believe all that stuff. But I do believe in learning about the... Pardon me?
Oh, go ahead.
I believe in... Yeah.
Oh, no. I'll keep quiet. Your turn. Keep going.
No. I, you know what's happening is our phones are kind of, you're saying something and then I'm saying something and it's a delay. You know what I mean? I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, really.
Oh, yeah. I think there's about a minute display. I know, you know, we are running out of time. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to let everyone know where they can get your books and contact
sure.
you if somebody had a question.
Okay, you know, I appreciate that. I thank you very much. Well, one of the quickest ways to do it, because when you're talking like this on a podcast, you know, you sit there and try to ramble off a long, URL, website name, and then nobody remembers it. The best way is if anybody goes on Amazon, go to Amazon. Most people know how to type that in, find Amazon, and there's a place where you can go down to, say, Kindle Books. That's a popular ebook format, or just Amazon Books, whatever. If you type in the search field, my name, Michael, MICHAEL, space, and then freeze. That's FREZE, not two E's, FREZE. When you click on that, all of my books in their different formats, paperback, ebook, audio, on all these topics and others, miracles, whatever, they should all pop up. They'll show the ratings. You can click on the cover. It'll guide you what to do next. But that's the best way, Michael Freeze. And that I guess that's the quickest way for people maybe to remember. If they ever want to follow what I do on my Facebook page, because I have a lot of people that I correspond with on there. When you go into Facebook, you know you all have a username, right? Mine is it's like www.facebook.com/, and it would be Mike, M-I-K-E dot, F-R-E-Z-E, one, the numeral one. So Mike dot freeze number one. And that should pull my page up. And I try very hard to correspond with people all the time there.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we're out of time. And, you know, we're going to have to get you back on. We barely scratched the surface, and I know you have so much information.
I know time goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It is.
Yeah, and
it really
absolutely.
Does. Well, I hope the show was interesting for your listeners. I really do. I hope they got something out of the show.
I'm sure they
well.
Did.
Go ahead. Next mm-hmm. time we have you on the show, we'll have an option if you want, Mike, to have them call in if they have any questions.
You know, that's what I was hoping to do, but we ran out of time. But maybe next time, if you want to continue the same topic or hone in on another one that I've written about, and then include, I would love to have people have time to ask questions, because that dialogue, I'm very comfortable with spontaneous questions. I don't have to have pre-rehearsed questions put in front of me. I've dealt with this before, and it always flows well. It's always really nice. So, yes, I'd like to do that next time.
That's really great.
Yeah, that would be great. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing that with us. And we'll get you back, and hopefully soon we can touch this subject and some others. It's been really enlightening. Now I'm kind of freaked out, so I'm going to go for a walk after the show.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks, Jerry. Hey, Jason, when you go for a walk, just keep looking over your shoulder, okay?
Well, Jason, don't get too freaked out.
I will. It's dark out and creepy.
Wow.
Talk to you guys. You guys, God bless, and I'll talk to you later.
All right.
God bless you.
Thank you, Mike, for coming
on
the show. We appreciate you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We'll be in touch. Wow, very good. Wow, he's got so many books out there and so many different takes on it. It like you said, we're just really just scratching the surface.
I know. It's very interesting. I find theology interesting. I kind of wish I knew more about it, but I don't. You know, as with everything, like I've said before, I'm a little skeptical about everything, but I'm open, so...
Yes, and at least you have that balance. At least you're not gullible and things like that. So it's good. You have an open mind, but you want to be very discerning. I would say very discerning mind. That's very good.
Absolutely. So, Sherry, you are amazing at finding guests. What do we got coming up next week?
Well, we're going to welcome back, and he would like to come back. We're going to get back into Brian. It's Ouellette. I think it's Ouellette. He's the exorcist. We're going to talk about a different subject. So, wealth of information. Love to share with others his experience and vast many years' experience as an exorcist and dealing with exorcisms and things like that. So we're going to probably talk about something different this time. I'd love to have him back. Like I said, he's a wealth of information. Loves to share his knowledge and his many years of experience and very successful service of what he does to help clear homes and the exorcism. So, yeah, we're going to have him back, and that's pretty much about it. So we want to thank everybody that is listening or going to come back and listen to our podcast. Without you, we wouldn't have a success as we do with our show. So, and all the people that we have are the best in their field. So we're just very happy to be able to have each and every guest that are just phenomenal.
Absolutely. Hey, Sherry, you know, I think I actually have a blessed rosary. I think I'm going to have to hang that on my bed tonight.
Okay. We'll carry it with you. Jason, if you really freak out, call me. You'll
hey,
be okay.
I freak out easy.
You're a big guy. I think you can manage.
Well, in the human world, I'm big and scary looking, if anybody's seen my picture. But when it comes to the unseen spiritual world, I'm a big wimp, so.
Okay, you'll be okay.
Anyway, alrighty.
Well, everybody.
All right, we'll close the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time for Paranormal Horizons. And I want to thank our guest tonight for calling in and check out his stuff. And with that, we bid you adieu, and we'll see everybody next weekend. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Peace.